This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK12. And by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 125, The Rudolphs of the Empire. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Mike Schindler. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the Enterprise Season 4 Blu-ray set, the five stages of reading the novelization of Star Trek The Motion Picture, and we round out our preview of Five-Year Missions Year 3 with A Piece of the Action and the Immunity Syndrome. Then in the feature, we're joined by Tyler Johnson to discuss Klingon Foreheads and the Enterprise two-parter, Affliction and Divergence. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Mike. It's good to have you back with me on the Ready Room. And I know we're recording really late at night for you because apparently you've been caught up in some sort of big sports ball event tonight.
Yeah, it's been kind of an epic day of sports ball here in the Schindler household. My team, the Bears, and my wife's team, the Packers, are both in the playoff hunt. And the day started off really well for me today with the Packers losing, which meant if the Bears won, they're in the playoffs. But no, the Bears had their chronometers cleaned by the Eagles. So now next week, the Bears and the Packers play each other, and the winner goes to the playoffs. So it's going to be very tense.
Yeah, it sounds like there's going to be a little bit of tension there in the Schindler household next weekend.
Just a little bit. But we made it through 2010 when they played each other to get to the Super Bowl. And I think the reason why we made it through is because my wife's team won. So I'm kind of hoping that happens again, even though I am a Bears fan at heart.
I've told the story on here before, I'm sure, but I mean, everyone knows that I graduated from the University of Alabama. If they've been listening to the show for long enough to hear us talk about sports ball, but my mother's side of the family are all Auburn fans, and my father's side of the family are all Alabama fans. And back in the day when we played a 10-game season, the Iron Bowl was always the weekend before Thanksgiving. And so we would all go to my grandparents' house for Thanksgiving Day, and you had to hope your team won, because if your side lost, you had to endure the jabs from the other side of the family for the entire day.
Oh, yeah. I know what that's like. I have been on trips to Green Bay with three family members, all Packers fans, and me, the lone Bear fan. It's not fun. It's not fun. Especially when you're outnumbered.
Nope, not at all. Well, we had to get a little bit of football talk in here, everyone, because it's the end of the year. It's December. It's that time where things matter in the world of sports ball. But, you know, we're not going to talk about sports ball all day today. We're going to talk about Enterprise. It's Enterprise week. And in the feature today, we're going to talk about two episodes, Affliction and Divergence, and the whole Klingon Forehead debate. And those come from season four, Mike, and January 7th, we're going to get season 3 on Blu-ray, which I've already pre-ordered. But we did get news this week about season 4, and rolling around April 1st, we'll be able to watch these two episodes we're doing today in HD.
Yeah, I kind of think we should wait, you know?
Let's call off the show. We're not going to do the feature today. We're going to wait.
Yeah, I'm really excited about season 4 coming out. You know, I've been kind of holding off because I've wanted to do sort of a rewatch of Enterprise, but I wanted to wait until all four seasons were out so that I could just barrel right through them. And now that I know that it's only, like 3 months away, I guess at this point, I can get started. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, you can go ahead and start now, depending on how many you're planning to watch per week, I guess. You're probably not going to do like I did, where I watched like 7 per day when I did my recent rewatch.
I don't know. My wife is a taskmaster when it comes to watching Star Trek, so we might end up watching 7 a day, depending.
Well, you might. When we did the 4400 on Commentary Trek Stars this past week, recording anyway, you said you watched 10 episodes of the 4400 in one day, right?
That was out of desperation, but yes, I did. I literally finished the last episode like 15 minutes before we started recording.
Well, at least it was fresh in your mind, right?
That's true.
So yeah, April 1st, season 4 will drop on Blu-ray, 6 discs. And I've been looking forward to this as well because I also want to do another rewatch, but I want to watch them all in HD this time. The last one I did was off of Netflix, which is better than the DVDs that I have, yes, but it's still not the same. And if you switch between the two, which I did to test, it's just astonishing the difference in the image quality.
Yeah, I mean, you still get compression artifacting and all that stuff. And yeah, for sure. And not to mention that the sound is much better on the Blu-ray. And
right.
You get all the special features, which have been outstanding. You know, Roger Lay and Robert Meyer Burnett have been doing a fantastic job with these things. And we're going to get some new commentaries, some deleted scenes, outtakes, and then also a couple featurettes.
Yeah, and the featurette, that's what I'm looking forward to most about this. If there's one thing that I just can't wait to see on these discs, it's this writing Star Trek Enterprise featurette that they're doing, a 90-minute sit-down staff reunion with Brannon Braga and Mike Sussman and Andre Bermanis and David Goodman, Chris Black, Phyllis Strong, and then Judith and Garfield Reeve Stevens. The one they did with the actors in season 2 was just really fantastic, and I'm even more interested in the writing process, so this is going to be probably like my favorite thing on any Star Trek Blu-ray release that's come out so far, even for TNG even.
Well, TNG did the writer's room thing too, which was cool.
Yeah, but you know so much about TNG over the years. Like, people have talked so many times over the years that you've learned a lot more. But with Enterprise, a lot of this stuff is, it's really coming out now. And there was so much turmoil in the show as well, you know, with the studio and all.
That's true. And I am looking forward to this, especially since it's like 90 minutes long. You know, usually if you do get something like this, it's a little kind of like cheapy thing. But here, I mean, 90 minutes, that's a substantial amount of time. The one thing which I'm a little, suspicious about is the fact that there is a big name missing from that list, and that's Manny Coto. I mean, I don't know, but you'd think you'd want him there. I'm sure they did want him there. He's probably busy doing, is he doing the 24 thing now? I don't know what he's doing now. Yeah. Does he have another?
I'm not sure if that's what he's doing, but it probably was a scheduling thing because they weren't sure if they were going to be able to pull off the whole actors reunion, and Conor Trinneer had to leave halfway through that.
Yeah.
Disappears and then is replaced by Jeffrey Combs.
He is everywhere,
which is cool.
yeah. So it's probably that. I mean, I would hope it's not that they're trying to, that they told Manny, yeah, we're recording on Tuesday at 3, and they actually recorded on like Monday at 4 or something like that.
It seems like him and Braga are pretty good friends. I kind of don't think that happened, but oh well.
All right. So we don't know a whole lot about which episodes have commentaries or what all of the special features are going to be yet, but we do know about this one, In Conversation, Writing Star Trek Enterprise, and also Before Her Time, Decommissioning Enterprise, a 4-part documentary where they're going to talk to the cast and the crew, do the interviews there. I noticed in the trailer that Anthony seems to have his beard from the Chariot filming, the film that he was just doing with the airplane, the kind of psycho thriller. Mm. Looked a little bit like that. So maybe the timing was around then. I'm not sure.
Maybe it's just Mirror Universe Anthony.
Maybe. Maybe so. They've also revealed the cover art. Now, I did want to ask you what you think about this, Mike. The cover art has been a controversy throughout the process of releasing Enterprise on Blu-ray. If you remember, they had those three mock-ups that they put on the Facebook page for season one, and they were all terrible. And then they finally released something that was completely different than any of those because they had such bad reaction to the ones that they had put up there. And season one, they used a stock image of the crew that was used in publicity. You have to hold the package in your hand, though. It actually turned out really, really well, the way that they printed it. And it's kind of embossed, and it's kind of slightly holographic. Season two turned out well. Also, now, season three was a huge controversy because they had season one T'Pol, season one Archer on the season three cover. There was a lot of outcry. They fixed that. And so season three looks okay. But now season four comes out, and at least on TrekCore, there's more complaining about the season four artwork. What did you think about the cover?
I mean, looking at the cover, I mean, I'm not a graphic designer like yourself, but I can honestly say that the cover is rather hideous. however, I love the fact that we've gotten to a point where the thing that we're complaining about is the box art. Because back right. in the day, we were complaining about how crappy the discs were. And now, right. all we're complaining about is the packaging. And I honestly have to say, and this goes back to when the Battlestar Galactica Blu-rays were released, I kind of am sick and tired of people complaining about packaging.
So say we all.
Okay, there are people who wouldn't buy the Battlestar Galactica set because they hated the packaging so much.
So say we all.
And it's like, dudes, it's a box. Like, literally, it's a box. Okay? So I'm not going to get worked up over the crappy artwork on the Enterprise Season 4 box.
What I didn't like about the Battlestar Galactica sets was the 2.0, 2.5, we're going to split the season in half and charge you twice for the season thing
yeah.
that they did.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we're not getting Enterprise Season 4.0 and 4.5 here.
Yes, that's true.
You know, I think for one thing with the package, I'm just looking at it and knowing what they've done with Season 1 and 2, which I have here on my shelf, I have a feeling this is going to look really different when you hold it in your hand because the way that the coloring is done, I'm sure that it's going to be embossed, I would suspect. And the Enterprise flying into the, I don't know what it's flying into here, an exploding star.
I think the future.
Flying into the future, you know. I know the scene, and they show it in the trailer, but it looks kind of different the way they have it here on the cover. But this is probably going to feel like a very, like a copper kind of metallic feel. It's going to look very different. The one complaint that I do get is, why do they keep putting Connor Trinneer, why do they put Trip Tucker in the very back on all the covers when he and T'Pol and Archer are the trifecta of Enterprise? Why is he in the back? Come on, Mike, tell me. I know you like to complain about artwork.
I honestly don't have an answer for you. It's quite possible that whoever was doing the artwork didn't watch the show.
well, you're probably right there. I think what it is that's not Trip Tucker.
Oh.
Trip died. That's Sim from Similitude.
Okay.
Back there in the back.
Well, then I guess it would make sense but then why is he on the cover at all?
He walked in while they were shooting the photo. He just kind of wandered in and stood back there.
So that's one photo. Like all those actors were standing there. That's not like, some people like very obviously cut out and pasted together. Wow.
Right. They all lined up right behind Archer like this. It was strange to be sure, but yeah. That's why Reed here looks like, I can't believe we're doing this.
Yeah.
The other complaint on TrekCore is about the fact that the Star Trek Enterprise logo is in black. And They kind of have a point that it's in white on the other three. And so if you line them up on your shelf, one's going to be in black. But I think from an artwork standpoint, if you did this in white, yeah, you're going to kind of lose it. So
I can't go down that road. I'm sorry. If I go down that road, it's just going to lead to bad places.
Well, you're probably thinking about, you know, you're thinking about Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, aren't you, as a TOS guy from Standard Orbit?
That's not what I was thinking at all. I was thinking about how there was one time where a friend of mine from California had me go to a bunch of Walmarts in the area to find the Star Wars Episode IV A New Hope DVD with the silver box instead of the gold box so that it would match the other three on his shelf. And how ridiculous that was, and how I've heard this complaint a million times, and how I have the DVDs of the Star Trek movie sitting up there, and the fact that Star Trek VI is in a white box and not a black box has never once caused the universe to implode or inhibit my enjoyment of Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. It's still an awesome movie, white box and all, you know? So who cares what color Enterprise is? You know what bothers me more? Not on this one, but on the other two? The fact that it says Star Trek Enterprise when the show is actually called Enterprise in the first two seasons.
Well, it bothers me that it says Star Trek Enterprise at all, because the show should just be Enterprise. You didn't need the Star Trek on there, and the studio thinking that that was somehow going to make a difference in the ratings. It was kind of silly.
But. Yeah.
Anyway, Trekcore mocked up their own season 4 cover, and I have to say that in this situation, I don't agree with them. The studio's cover is better than the one they mocked up, because the one they mocked up, there's no focal point unless it's the Enterprise way up in the front. The characters don't stand out, and the title at the top in white is the main thing that you notice. And the studio cover, the characters very, very much come to the forefront. And the title and the Enterprise followed the back, which is how it should be. So we'll see. I think it's going to look just fine when you see the actual printed box in your hand, for those of you who are concerned about that kind of thing.
And if not, make your own. There's a whole thing. You can find websites of people who make their own box art, and lots of times it's better. You know, there were guys mm-hmm. who were complaining about the Battlestar Galactica set who would make binders out of the binders that they had on the show. And, you know, put the discs in there so you'd have it in like a Battlestar Galactica screen accurate binder. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. So if they want to, you know, make their own artwork, cool, you know.
Well, do it, you know. Yeah, that's what I did for ALF. I wasn't happy with the packaging the studio did for ALF, and so I just made my own.
You bought the ALF discs? You are aware that they are edited for syndication.
Yes, I know. But, hey, you know, that's... How else are you going to get your ALF fix back? You know, and now you can watch it on Netflix or Hulu, but you couldn't do that back when the discs were out.
This is true. This is true. No, but seriously, if they weren't edited for syndication, I would have ALF sitting on my shelf right now because that show is awesome.
See, that's what you care about. They're edited for syndication, damn it.
Way
more I don't care
important.
What the box art looks like, but... All right. Well, again, these April 1st retail price on these are $130 in the U.S., $150 in Canada, which is insane, but you won't pay that much. You can pre-order. It's around $90 pre-order right now at Amazon. They'll give you the lowest price, and I've been paying about $64 to $70 range for them when they actually ship. So that's what we've got coming for Enterprise. Okay, Mike, let's move on to the next thing here. This is an article that I came across the other day on Tor.com by Ellen Cheesman-Meyer. And I put this in here because you were co-hosting, and of course, you're doing our TOS show, Standard Orbit, with Drew. And this is about the novelization of Star Trek, the motion picture. It's the five stages of reading the novelization of Star Trek, the motion picture. And the things that Ellen points out here, I found really... interesting. Now, I have to admit that if I read the novelization, it was so long ago that I don't remember anything about it anymore. After reading this article, I am going to get it and I am going to read it because I want to see if I see the same things in here. The first one is just awe, because it's written by Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah,
she says it's canon. How do you feel about this?
That's an interesting question, and something which we'll probably get into later on in the news. But I would say yeah, because I mean I know that there was wasn't there a rumor going around that Alan Dean Foster actually wrote this one himself, like he did with Star Wars. Yeah. I don't think that's true though, right? It was Gene Roddenberry.
No, and in fact, Christopher L. Bennett posted to the comments on the Tor.com article and said, look, anyone who's even remotely familiar with Alan Dean Foster's work can see that he didn't write this book. Yeah. He said that this book is clearly written by someone who is not very experienced as a prose author. Mm-hmm. And with Gene Roddenberry being accustomed to writing scripts, you know, it feels like that. And a lot of the ideas in here as well really feel like they came right out of Gene's head.
Right. And that, I think, is a really interesting concept, and one reason why I've always wanted to read the motion picture novelization, even though I never have. And I would say that it's canon. You know, there's an interesting thing. I mean, and which has been brought up, you know, with the comic books, you know, Star Trek ongoing, and whether or not those are canon. I'd say that they are. And my personal philosophy has sort of always been, if it's written by someone who also was writing for the show, then yeah, it's canon. I mean, like Jerry Taylor stuff, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
you know,
I consider those canon.
You know, some of the stuff, you know, maybe it gets a little confusing with the Reeves Stevenses, since their stuff was written before they were involved, but I would say sure, why not? And David Mack, since he's written like 3 million books, you know. But then again, I would say yes, and we can get into that later on too. But this, yeah, totally canon. And the fact that some of this stuff may contradict things that came later, whatever, it's Star Trek. You know, that's what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my feeling on it too. If Gene wrote it, then I have to take it as canon.
Yeah.
And it's going to contradict some things that happened, of course, because it didn't all make it on the screen. But, you know, it's his franchise. He created the whole thing, so... So that's an interesting one. Now, number two, interesting sexual revelations about the Kirk family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they talk about how... Okay, let me see if I can get this straight. Kirk was named after his uncle and his mother's first love instructor.
Right.
Now, the first question there is, are his uncle and his mother's first love instructor the same dude?
Or that's a good question.
Are they two different people? And the second question is, his mother's first love instructor?
Right. Well, the question is, what is a love instructor, first of all? You would have to assume that it wouldn't be the person who you're actually in a relationship with, because it's like you have a tutor on the side or something.
I would assume this would be before you're in a relationship. No, I don't know. I mean, Gene Roddenberry, he's kind of a weird guy. I'm sure he had some really interesting ideas. I'm sure that if you were to talk to him, he would explain it to you and it would make a lot of sense. But I love the fact that there is no explanation. I really, really do.
And as Ellen says, when she recounts what we're just talking about here, she says, yeah, that's what it said. That's page one. So,
if you want to hook someone into your story, I mean, it honestly, a lot more effective than like a weird cloud, you know, vaporizing some Klingons.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The next one is Starfleet does what? And there were two very interesting things in here. One is that they have emergency communication devices embedded in their flag officers' brains.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think that's a little weird. And maybe if you're going to talk about things which aren't canon, that would probably be right at the top of the list. But, I mean, it kind of makes sense, aside from the fact that it essentially makes you black out whenever you get a message. That seems kind of dangerous. Hey, you know, Star Trek is filled with interesting ideas. I mean, look at the original series. So the fact that, you know, after 10 years, he had some new cool ideas and he wanted to throw those into the movie. Why not?
Yeah, it feels like one of those very just kind of future sci-fi ideas, right? Especially at that time where you're thinking about what's it going to be like in the future. And yeah, having communication devices in the brains. I mean, to be honest with you, it wouldn't surprise me if we have some sort of communication devices in our own brains sometime within this century, you know, the way things are going. And with,
sure,
with Google Glass, you know, being a next step. And it seems like eventually we're just going to have some little chip embedded in our brains anyway. So it's probably not that far-fetched, but it does sound strange within what we're accustomed to in Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the next one I really like, because we always talk about the belt buckle fetish that admirals have in Star Trek and how they all design their own belt buckles. Apparently, Starfleet has medical scan devices embedded in everyone's belt buckle in this novel.
I mean, that just makes sense. I mean, NASA does that now, right? I mean, not with belt buckles, but they're monitoring, you know, the vitals of all the astronauts while they're up there, right? There's that whole scene in Apollo 13 mm-hmm. where they rip it off and the dude starts freaking out down in Houston or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if they didn't have medical scan devices in everyone's belt buckle.
Yeah, I'm with you, too, because if you think about, you know, there are all these rumors about Apple releasing an iWatch. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the speculation, which I think is probably more accurate, especially if you look at some acquisitions Apple has made or people they've brought in anyway and what these people were working on beforehand, it seems like what it might be more so than just, you know, a gee whiz futuristic watch is it might be a band that actually monitors your vital signs that gives you data that you need for health and fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And so with something like that possibly being available, well, I mean, I guess we already have some things that kind of do that as it is now. You know, there are devices similar to that already. And if Apple were to release one, widespread adoption would probably follow more so than it has now. And so, yeah, I mean, by Starfleet age, I would think that everyone's vital signs would be measured at any time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, on a more interesting one here, talking about Ilea, the Delton, Ellen asks here, is she a sex bot? Because of the fact that the mechanical recreation hasn't taken an oath of celibacy like Ilea had. And then, you know, Will Decker, he's ready to hook up with her.
Is he? Now, see, this is what I wasn't quite sure about from reading the article, but is this just Ellen's interpretation of the material, or is this something which is stated in the book? Because
this one, again, I don't know for sure because I haven't read the book, but I think this one I took as being her interpretation. I think her asking the question, like if you duplicate Ilea, now she's a mechanical recreation. She's no longer the Ilea that we knew. You see how she's dressed, how she's presented. You see at the end, you know, the fact that V'ger sends her back over, because I think part of it is that V'ger needs a way to communicate, and he uses Ilea to reach Decker because of the fact that they already had a relationship with one another. And so using Ilea as the vehicle of communication seemed like something that had a chance for success. And so I think this is just Ellen kind of asking the question here, like, well, what is the mechanical recreation of Ilea?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that says something more about Ellen than it does about Roddenberry.
Maybe. No. I think it's an interesting question, but I don't know. I mean, you know all the stories that we've heard, so.
I think when it comes to whether or not something is sex-related in relation to a Gene Roddenberry creation, when in doubt, the answer is yes.
That's the feeling I've gotten from a number of discussions that I've heard, shows that I've watched. I think even, especially there was some stuff in the recent, I think it was on the Smithsonian Channel, mm-hmm. like the, what was it called? The Real History, the True History of Star Trek or something like that, which was generally lighter in terms of its research than some things that we've seen or read in recent years, but it did have a few new bits of information that I had not seen these particular interviews before. So kind of got that feeling. All right. And then there's one more here. The universe has one single purpose.
Yeah. So she says, well, the universe is a butterfly flapping its wings in the Amazon so that Kirk can command the Enterprise with Spock at his side. Now, is this something that, again, something that she's reading into it, or is this something which is stated? Because I actually just wrote a short little essay on this in order to win tickets to a movie called Her, which Star Trek fans would probably actually like quite a bit. And, you know, the question, the essay question was, you know, what is your favorite movie featuring an unconventional romance? And my answer was Star Trek The Motion Picture, which is all about Kirk trying to get back together with his ex, which, you know, his ex, of course, is the Enterprise. You know, mm-hmm. He's let his career get in the way. You know, he accepted a promotion which took him away from his one true love, and now he will do anything to get her back, you know, even if it means, you know, kicking out this other dude and all that stuff. So I don't really know if that's like the universe is at play there. I think it's more just about Kirk, you know, doing what people do when they can't let go of yeah. someone they love.
I feel like this one might be colored by not just this novelization, but by Star Trek in general. Mm-hmm. Because what we see here is, like you say, Kirk's an admiral. He wants to get back to the Enterprise, and he wants to get his command back. And so he does that here. And then we see once again, when we get to the Wrath of Khan, okay, well, he's got a desk job again. He wants to get back to the ship. You know, and McCoy's even telling him, you've got to get back, got to get back to the ship before you grow old. And then you see again at the end of the voyage home, his punishment is to be given his command back yet again. And then you see even in the Abrams verse that it's Spock who's there and Kirk is kind of coming in, but when everything plays out, then Kirk's in command with Spock by his side. So it's like in every situation, like the universe is trying to correct itself time and time again, that if Kirk finds his way out of that captain's chair, it gets him back in there. And then usually with Spock by his side.
I mean, that's definitely something which is brought up, you know, like you were saying in Star Trek 09, that issue is sort of addressed, you know, the idea of, well, they say the timeline trying to correct itself, but essentially the idea of destiny. And I mean, I think that's kind of stupid, but I definitely think that is present and not just there. Like you're saying, it is there throughout Star Trek. So, yeah.
I think it's interesting. I think it's the idea, you know, and I don't believe in fate or, you know, the idea that some divine being has written out our lives for us in advance. But at the same time, I do find the concept of time interesting and the idea that there really is no past, present, or future, and everything that's going to happen has already happened. It's just how we perceive it, you know, unfolding. And so that there are sort of these predetermined, but I guess just predetermined by nature, not by any sort of divine intervention or script being written, but like things are supposed to be a certain way. I think that, I don't know if I believe that or not, but I think the concept is interesting. Mm-hmm. And I can certainly see that with Kirk sitting in the command chair of the Enterprise in Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, like I said, after reading this article, which everyone can find over at tor.com, and we'll put a link in the show notes and here in the Enhanced podcast, so you can go read the whole thing, I'm going to pick up the novelization and read it, because you asked several times in here, is this really in the story or is this just Ellen's interpretation? And so I want to find out what's in there, what's interpretation, and then if I even see these things in there myself.
Yeah, I have to read it now. I mean, it sounds really interesting. I've always wanted to read it, but now I have to read it. And you know,
you must. The universe is it's a butterfly flapping its wings in the Amazon, so that you will read the novelization of Star Trek, The Motion Picture. You can't resist it.
A butterfly flapping its wings in the Amazon or on Amazon? Either way, I guess
on
works.
Amazon.
Okay.
Maybe that one.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, like one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to reading this book now and everything is because, you know, new Trek is rather hard to come by. But there are all of these gems out there, all of these books, and there's a bunch of audio books available that I've never read either on audible.com.
Absolutely. And that leads us right into our first sponsor for the show today, and that is audible.com. And yeah, like you said, now Audible, they have over 150,000 books there on the site. They're putting new stuff out every week. But for Star Trek fans, there is a whole collection of Star Trek books there. They're mostly TOS books and TNG books. There are a few DS9 books there as well. But if you've been thinking about the fact that you haven't read some of the real classics too, like if you listen to the shows and we often talk about Prime Directive, or Federation, especially those two. And we talked about Judith and Garfield. You mentioned them earlier, and of course they also wrote Divergence, the second episode we'll talk about today. Those books by them, Federation, Prime Directive, two of my favorite Star Trek books, and they have those in audio format.
I've never read either of them.
Oh, they're great.
If I were to sign up for Audible using the offer code from Trek FM, I could get one of those for free.
Absolutely, yeah. As a Trek FM listener, if you go over to Audible, audibletrial.com/TrekFM, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. So yeah, Prime Directive, Federation, either one of those I highly recommend. Another book that I'd like to recommend today, Mike, because we're going to be talking about Klingon so much in the future, is Star Trek Klingon. And this one is narrated by Michael Dorn and Robert O'Reilly. And as you were mentioning, in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
There's another reason that people might be familiar with this book.
Yeah, this audiobook is adapted from a video game which was released in the 90s called Star Trek Klingon, which was available on the PC. And this video game, it starred Robert O'Reilly. I believe he played Gowron, I'm assuming anyway, right? And it was directed by Jonathan Frakes, who, of course, made Star Trek First Contact and Star Trek Insurrection. And
he played a character on the show, too, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He played Thomas Riker in that one episode.
That's right, yeah.
Two episodes. I forgot he was on Deep Space Nine, too.
He was on Deep Space Nine, too, yeah.
Yeah, and it has Robert O'Reilly as Gowron. It also has J.G. Hertzler in there and everything like that. And it was written by Hilary Bader, who also wrote this book. And Hilary Bader herself, she was a Star Trek writer. She wrote a number of episodes of Deep Space Nine. So perhaps this is canon as well. I'm going to say it is. And for someone like me who didn't have a computer in 1996, now I can finally find out what was going on in this game.
Yeah, yeah. I had I didn't have the Klingon game. I had the board game, which was really good as well.
The board game was the best thing ever. Yeah.
I think there's a novelization of the board game on Audible as well.
Really?
In audio format, if I remember correctly.
Awesome.
Yeah. So pick this up, Star Trek Klingon, or get Prime Directive Federation, whatever you like, or any other book you like, or a non-Star Trek book if that's what you want. Whatever it is, you can get a free audiobook of your choice. Just go to audibletrial.com/TrekFM and sign up, try it. That helps us bring the Ready Room to you every week, and we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. All right, Mike, let's move on. We have one more thing in our news segment today, and this is the wrap-up of our preview of Five-Year Missions, Year 3. Of course, as I said last week when we started doing this, it actually was a preview. Since then, the album has become available, so you can go grab it right now if you want to hear all the tracks. But we do want to give everyone a little listen to everything that the disc has to offer. And so we're going to pick up the last two tracks that we haven't previewed. And the first of those is A Piece of the Action. So let's play a clip of that. All right, Mike. So I have to ask you a question because you live in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
In the song, they say it's just like Chicago, except with more guns. Is that accurate?
No, I believe that Chicago itself has way more guns than a piece of the action. But, you know, aside from that, just like Chicago.
Just like Chicago. Well, what did you think about this song here, if you tie it into the TOS episode?
I think that it's really cool. You know, of these two songs, A Piece of the Action is the episode, which I'm much more familiar with. And I love how if you listen to it just as a song in and unto itself, it tells the story very well. You don't need to have seen the episode to understand what they're talking about. But if you are familiar with the episode, there's so much more layered into it that it's really quite cool.
Yeah, I was glad that I like the style of it. I liked some of the lines in there. I was alarmed by your driving style. And I was also glad there was a Fizbin reference in there.
Mm-hmm. And they even say like something like, except on Tuesday or something along those lines, right?
Right? Yeah. We're stumbling through Fizbin. So that was a great one. All right. Well, let's move on to the other track. And that is the Immunity Syndrome.
So close up, if the sickness comes to us, then we can't stay strong enough. It's not just us who suffer the pain, how it ends, we end everyone.
All right, Mike, this one is very different in style, and this one for me, I guess my feeling on it was that it felt like big and galaxy spanning, and you know, you've got this giant single-celled amoeba. You're just threatening the galaxy itself, like you're looking for hope. And that one was, it's kind of what I felt, because this one is one of the songs that I have. It's a little bit harder for me to connect the style of the song with the theme of the episode.
Yeah, you know, this is going to sound really terrible since I'm the co-host of Standard Orbit, but there's a lot of episodes of the original series where if you were to tell me the title of them, I'd be like, I have no idea which episode that is. I'm sorry, I don't know. And this is one of them. So I kind of went into this song blind in a sense. And even with that, it still works. I mean, the thing that I find most impressive, and I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before, but this stuff totally stands on its own as just good music. Like, you know, when I was listening to this, it reminded me of, you know, something from like 90s alternative, you know, it sounded right. Like a Soul Asylum song or something like that.
I
thought that it was just a really good song, even if it had absolutely nothing to do with Star Trek.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, that's the feeling I got as well on this one. So, and I think that's one of the big points that I do want to point out about 5-Year Mission. Not only Year 3, but Year 2 and Year 1. Everything they do is that all this does, as you say, stand on its own as great music. And it just happens to tie into Star Trek. And that makes it all the better for me. But Noah and Andy and Patrick and Mike and Chris, they all just do such a great job with the album. And if you're a Star Trek fan and you don't have these albums, really go pick them up right now.
For sure. Yeah.
So you can go over to 5yearmission.net and find out everything you need to know over there. I know it's also available on iTunes. I'm sure it's available on Amazon. I've seen it on RDO because that's the streaming service that I use. I'm pretty sure it's on Spotify as well. And if you do stream them and you like the album, go by and buy a copy as well and support the band, because every little bit helps with what they're doing. And that wraps up all the tracks from the album. So this will be the last week that we're previewing. And we're going to have to wait 2 years for year four, but in between, we're going to get the Spock's Brain EP. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Sweet.
All right, Mike. Well, that's everything we have in news today. Before we jump into the feature and talk about Enterprise and Klingon foreheads, let's tell everyone about our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace. Squarespace is the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create your own blog, website, portfolio, or online store. And as we talk about every week, Squarespace has three main points that I really love, and those are the fact that they're design-focused. They give you extremely clean templates that are professionally designed that really make it easy for you to put your content at the forefront as the focus of your website. You don't need to know anything about HTML or coding, you know, anything like that in order to do it. A promotion with connected accounts going out to Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, Google, many other social services as well. So you can automatically push your content out when you publish it. And also the responsive design that makes your website look beautiful, whether it's on a desktop display, whether it's on a smartphone or a tablet, the site will automatically reflow so that your information, your content is presented in the best possible way and is easy for everyone to read wherever they are. Mike, how often do you read websites on your tablet or your smartphone versus the computer?
A lot. And when a website isn't formatted for the tablet or for my iPhone, I get really, really frustrated. And 9 times out of 10, I just go to a different website.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of the same for me as well now, because I do read so much on my iPhone, on that little bitty screen. I don't know why I do it, because I have an iPad, but it's just kind of like, well, the iPhone's in my pocket and I don't want to walk over and pick up the iPad, so I'll just read it on the iPhone. So yeah, responsive design is really important these days, and it's great that you don't have to actually code a completely separate website with this. Also, selling products online is something more and more people are doing these days. It can be complicated to accept credit cards and process orders online. I've had to set up PayPal and other systems for clients before, and for my own company as well. And what I love about Squarespace is that they have integrated Stripe, which is a payment system, directly into the platform. And since you're already a Squarespace user, you get instant approval. It's a 30-second merchant sign-up. There's no paperwork to do, and in just a matter of minutes, you can begin receiving money for purchases via direct deposit, and it handles your full tax and shipping rules by region as well to make it really, really easy for you to rent a store, whether you want to sell both digital products or physical products. You know, Mike, I'm thinking that, you know, I've heard about all these movies that you make, fan films and stuff. I'm thinking that the video features of Squarespace, along with the e-commerce features here, you might have a little business going for yourself.
Yeah, I'm thinking no one, including myself, wants to see my movies. But I'm also thinking that if you were to sell Trek FM t-shirts, I would totally use Stripe to buy them.
Yeah, we need to do that. We need to get some Trek FM shirts together. We had a lot of people ask about that, actually. And yeah, Squarespace would be the perfect way. And of course, Trek FM is built on Squarespace. So when we do that, that's how we will sell them. So, you know, the best way to find out how great Squarespace is, whether you want to create a blog and you just want to write about something, or you want to create a full website for your business or your organization, or whether you're an artist or a musician or a filmmaker and you want to, you know, share your work online, or you want to build an online store, just go try it for free. You can try Squarespace free for 14 days, and there's no credit card required. You just put in your name and your email address, and in a matter of minutes, you'll be building a site. And the plans are really economical, just $8 per month for the basic package, which gives you a lot, and it's probably all you're going to need. But you can get unlimited everything for $16 per month, and that's the most popular plan. And the commerce package, if you want to use Stripe, that's just $24 per month. And as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% off your purchase on new accounts by using offer code TREK12. And by doing that, you'll be helping us bring the Ready Room to you every week. So just go to squarespace.com to try it for free. Don't forget to use offer code TREK12. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of the Ready Room and Trek FM. fewest subjects in Star Trek have caused as much controversy as Klingon forehead ridges. A simple lack of resources in 1967 and a big movie budget in 1979 worked together to create one of the greatest debates of our time. Why do some Klingons have ridges while others do not? Deep Space Nine chimed in on the topic in a humorous way in Trials and Tribulations, but Enterprise sought to create a real in-universe explanation. And today we're going to discuss that explanation and the episodes Affliction and Divergence. And to help us do that, we're joined by a first-time guest on The Ready Room, Tyler Johnson. Welcome, Tyler.
Thank you. Hi, Chris.
How's everything going there in Oregon?
It's great. It's cold winter, almost no daylight, but we're having a good time.
Almost no daylight. Have you been partaking of the sports ball as Mike has been tonight?
Yeah, I follow a different sports ball. My sports balls are round, not oblong.
Okay. And orange, not brown, right?
And orange, yes.
All right. Well, that was our quick moment of the locker room for this week. Now let's jump into the ready room and talk about Enterprise. It's Enterprise Week, and we're going to talk about this two-parter from Season 4. And Mike, you picked the episodes for this week, and I'll have you start us off, but I thought it would also be nice just to start off sharing our general thoughts on this controversial topic of Klingon forehead ridges.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of debate about this, like you were saying, and I am very conflicted on it because on the one hand, I realize that it was just a matter of budget. And I think the idea of sort of making a big deal out of something and trying to find the explanation for why this is occurring when it's really freaking obvious that the explanation is just that they got some money, you know, right. I mean, that sort of bothers me. The idea that people would be like, no, we gotta, it's a prequel, so they've gotta, you know, not have the foreheads because this is how it was. And it's like, no, do you want to take this show seriously or not? Come on. Let's just give them some freaking foreheads. On the other hand, I am kind of one of those people who does that. You know, I'm always looking for the hidden continuity and the reason for this and that and all this stuff. And, you know, I'm the guy who, you know, when it came time to showing my wife the series, the franchise on the whole, I made her switch back and forth between Deep Space Nine and Voyager so that she would watch them in chronological order, even though it didn't matter at all.
Oh, did you? Wow.
Yeah, I did. So the idea that they would come up with an explanation, like, that really impressed me, and I was really a big fan of that. And, you know, to me, I'm not going to criticize the franchise for not doing that. But if you're going to do it and you're going to do it in an entertaining way and in a way that makes sense, then awesome, you know, bonus points for you. So that's my take.
Well, how about you, Tyler? When I mentioned these episodes to you, you said, I have a lot to say about Klingon foreheads.
Well, that might have been a little bit of an overstatement, but yeah, I still remember seeing the first time they had the foreheads in the movies, because I watched them in order, even though it was, you know, in reruns and on VHS and whatnot. And it was just so cool when they all of a sudden had them in the movies. And, this race that was just sort of brown people now actually looked like they were aliens. And so part of what I like about it is that it did kind of look, given the time it was put out, a little, let's just say a little racist, right? Like, here's the bad guys and they're just sort of like pulling their mustaches in their very dark brown color.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now they feel like a real other alien race. And so having to go back and explain it, it's less fun than the DS9 sort of take on it. That was very tongue in cheek. But I still think this is actually better production value than that first movie. I think that if you watch it through and you cut this into a movie, it's kind of amazing by comparison.
Yeah.
So I'll take it.
Yeah. Speaking of in 1967, when we first saw Klingons in Erin of Mercy, and yeah, they just have dark skin and they have little mustaches. If you look, and Mike's going to jump on me here probably, if you look at JJ's universe, ooh, they're Romulans. Why are they bad? They've got tattoos all over their faces.
Oh, but they have the ears too, right?
They have the ears, yeah, but, you know, it's but, like,
well, you complaining because of their foreheads, aren't there?
No. I'm just like, one of my complaints about the JJ universe is that I feel that the aliens are not, the Romulans, the Klingons, the humans are not differentiated as much as we would be accustomed to in Star Trek. They're sort of the same guys, and let's put tattoos on one, and let's put little bumps on the other heads and earrings in their ridges.
But I think that's what they were trying to distinguish, you know, because they had the Vulcans there, and since most people who saw that movie probably aren't familiar with Balance of Terror. So, you know, how do you distinguish them and say, like, no, these are other guys with pointed ears. Not that guy. It's some other guy. So you give him some tattoos and you're like, there, it works in universe. And it's also a way to distinguish it for the general population. And I think that was a good solution to that problem.
And it's not as subtle as in TNG, where they gave the Romulans kind of bumps on their foreheads a little bit so that you can tell the difference. Yeah.
Well, and then the other thing in the JJ verse, if you want to go there, is that the Klingons look completely different too, right? Their ridges are completely different in that too. So you think, well, there's another story now that has to explain how there's a third kind of ridges.
But
because of, you know, the timeline was changed.
But you've got that problem in the original series movies too. Like, if you look at Star Trek V and Star Trek VI, those ridges aren't nearly as pronounced as the Next Generation ones.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just like, you know, some people have big ridges, some people have small ridges, you know? Some people have pierced ridges, some people don't, you know? Different strokes for different folks.
I feel like if you're Klingon in school, you know, they're saying, oh, your ridges are so small.
Probably. Just like the Ferengi, right?
Right, your lobes.
Well, you know what they say on Kronos? You know, have you seen the size of his ridges? You know what they say about Klingons with big ridges?
Yep, so. I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
All right. Well, sticking with the ridges here, I mean, for me, I'm what you said initially, Mike, and I always say it's probably because I am a creative professional myself, and I have been my whole career, that I simply look at it as, hey, they had money. They wanted to make them look alien. They didn't have money back then. For me, I never tried to reconcile in my mind why the Klingons looked the way they did on TOS, which I grew up watching, and why they looked the way that they did when I went to see the motion picture at the theater, and then when TNG came around. I just never even thought about it. It was just, this is newer material, and they've decided to make them look this way. They're the same race. They're the same aliens. Move along. I'm fine with it. But it's been such a debate, such a huge debate, and I hear some fans get into such huge arguments about it. And I thought what they did in Trials and Tribulations was really cute with Worf, and you know, it's a long story, and we don't talk about it with outsiders. And that was it. And I know when they wrote that, they were just thinking, this will be cute, it'll be a funny joke. But I've also talked to a lot of fans who say that, no, DS9, they messed it up even more because they actually came out and stated in canon something happened. Okay, so what happened? But by making that joke, they established the fact that, yes, something in universe happened, and it's a long story.
And I think you would have to in that situation because you're seeing the Klingons, and just like, you know, the tattoos on the Vulcans, you're going to have a lot of people who haven't seen that. And even if they have seen that and they know that they're Klingons, it's still the elephant in the room, you know, and you got to address it. And that's the best possible way you could address it. And it just solves all the problems. And really, if that was the explanation, I'd be like, you go Deep Space Nine. That's a good explanation. But you know, I don't know. I mean, and there is a thing, just getting back to sort of that, because it's, I mean, I guess the foreheads are the big one, but it's not just that. There's a lot of stuff with the original series, you know, the sets, and just the idea that, you know, technology in the real world has advanced so much since that show was on the air. And kind of the best explanation that I've ever come up with from like a fan trying to explain it is actually from Max, who said, you know, he always saw, looking at it from a TNG perspective, he saw the original series as being like a TV show chronicling the adventures of Captain Kirk and his crew. You know, it was like a historical fiction show.
Right.
You know,
I've heard that
these
before,
events
yeah.
did happen, but uh-huh. maybe not quite that way, you know? And if you think about it like that, it solves a whole lot of continuity problems.
So you're saying that when we watch TNG and onwards, we're actually watching things as they're happening. But when we're watching TOS, we're just watching one person retelling us things that they have heard that happened.
I'm not saying that because I don't want to get a bunch of email from people saying, like, you
no,
are stupid.
I'm not saying that that's what how you feel, but what you're describing and what Max is saying,
yes,
that's
yes.
the idea behind that.
That's the idea behind it. If someone who has control of the canon were to come out and say that, I'd be like, bravo, bravo.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, it's a little bit of an odd situation in that some of the technology we have now is better than the TOS technology. So, you know, they didn't have an iPhone. Somehow they needed these five different things to do something. And so, you know, if you can't kind of get past that and you've got to worry about canon that much, I think you got a little bit of a problem. So I kind of like that idea. Like, this is, you know, this is like a reenactment. And don't worry. Don't look over here at the screen. We just figured out a way to do that. You know, even the fact they talk about tapes, they're always putting tapes in, right?
Yeah.
It's retro, you know?
Yeah. Even better, it's like, you know, 500 years later, they're doing what they thought it was like.
Yeah, there you go. There's like, you know, Memory Alpha has, you know, blown up or something like that. And now they're like, oh, well, I guess we have to rely on Wikipedia. And, you know, Wikipedia, not that accurate. So.
Well, let's move on into Enterprise's attempt to explain this. And right off the bat, we get Madam Chang's surprise because you know how much Phlox loves Chinese food. And of course, Hoshi, apparently she likes to gossip because the place is now overrun with Starfleet personnel. Phlox wanted it to be his own little secret, but everyone's there. But then they come out and surprise, surprise, we've got these Rigelians who are going to kidnap Phlox because the Klingons need a doctor because they've decided to introduce the Augment virus, which came about in Borderland Cold Station 12 Augments trilogy earlier in the season into the Klingon population because they want to actually try to augment themselves as a way of counteracting the perceived threat of humans and the Federation, or well, there's no Federation yet, but humans and Starfleet enhancing themselves and then being able to overrun the Empire. What did you think about this line of thinking by the Klingons, first of all, and using the Augment virus from the trilogy earlier in the season?
Well, I think that it's really kind of brilliant in a lot of different ways. Setting it up with the sort of attack on Phlox and bringing that into the racism or the xenophobia, which was dealt with earlier in the season. I thought that was kind of cool because, like, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, they're bringing this back in. This is going to be an annoying subplot to deal with. And then it turns out that it's actually, you know, part of the larger story. And that I thought was cool. But the other thing about it, getting back to kind of what you were saying or the topic that you were discussing there, I think that using the augment DNA was kind of a stroke of genius because you had set it up earlier in the season. You'd set up that they had a conflict with the Klingons, and one of the ways of showing them, I think the first way that you see that these people are super duper strong and everything is by them beating up a bunch of Klingons, right?
Well, that's what you always do in Star Trek. If someone beams on the Enterprise D, what do? They beat up Worf. That's how you know they're strong.
Right. And I thought that served its purpose really well in that episode. But then to bring it back here from the flip side and say, okay, we're Klingons and we're not going to stand for humans beating us up. Okay. We need to get some of that DNA. Great. You know, the continuity there is something which is obviously lacking in almost all of Star Trek. And the fact that they're finally embracing stuff like that, not necessarily even making it a 24 style, you know, cliffhanger leading into the next episode all season long, but just saying like this thing that happened like 6 months ago, that's going to come into play here. I thought that was brilliant, like in specific detail. I mean, they do it a lot in just sort of like connecting the dots, but this was like specifically referencing events in previous yeah. episodes. But then also, it totally makes sense, even without that, that the Klingons would want the augment DNA because they're always trying to better themselves physically and stuff like that. And here they see what the humans are doing and they're trying to bring that into their society. And on top of all of this, it explains why they look more human, because they're injecting themselves with human DNA or whatever it is, you know? It's like all of the pieces just sort of click into place perfectly. And it's just, I thought that was the most amazing explanation. And it's something that they couldn't have even done without introducing the augments earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really fun. I thought it was, you know, there's so many subplots going on in the show, and you kind of have to, you know, if you were to try and write them all down and follow them, it would be a little complicated. But this being the main plot, that they've got this idea that, like you said, it makes sense in universe in so many different ways. And then it also creates a real tangible problem, except for the warp thing. I think we should talk about that in a minute. But, you know, that whole, like, it's like speed. If you go too slow, you're going to blow up. You know, like, you got to lean to the left side of the Enterprise so that you can go around the turn. Like, except for that part of it, like, it's very action-based. This is a great core for everything else to be built on. Let's put it that way.
I feel with the introduction of the augment DNA, the one problem that I have with it, overall, I'm kind of mixed on this entire story, just because, again, I think that they went way out of their way to create an explanation for something that, again, I think doesn't need an explanation. But okay, so they're doing it, and I think they did a pretty good job of creating something that does make sense in universe. But they ask, how did you get the DNA? And they say that some embryos were recovered from the wreckage of the Bird of Prey. I do not know how on earth that's possible. The Bird of Prey exploded just in space near the planet, just obliterated. I find it hard to believe that they would have recovered embryos from the wreckage of that explosion and used that DNA for this process. That felt like a little bit of a stretch to me.
I feel like anytime you put it out there and say, this is going to be about canon and we're going to try to explain something, you basically put the microscope on everything you do. So yeah, that seems a little bit iffy, you know, so does a few other things. I mean, but the whole Ridges thing seemed iffy before that too. And so they've just, yeah. They've said, hey, we're going to solve this. And of course, as soon as you start doing that, people go, oh, great, great. But you caused these other four problems. What about those now? Because I see your point.
Yeah.
So I think from a justification standpoint of why the Klingons are embarking on this in the first place is, it's interesting, clever, it makes sense. I can see where the Klingons would be thinking that. You get into some very, well, I think it's very Klingon. I'm not surprised at all that the Klingons would do this, which is testing this virus on prisoners first. And then, you know, the whole story opens up with the Klingon who comes in, who says, my death sentence was commuted. And they start jabbing this needle into him. And they run out of prisoners. And then they start actually test this on their own people, on their own soldiers, which is where we get the augments who board the Enterprise at some point in the episode to try to destroy the Enterprise. And of course, it turns out that one of them is actually the general's son. And even then, he seems to have no problem with it. So I think if we talk about ethics here a little bit, there are a lot of different interesting angles to the ethics. There's the ethics of the Klingons. There's the ethics of the Klingon doctor himself, Antak. And of course, there are the ethics of Phlox and how he's pulled into this. And I don't know what's the best starting point for that. So maybe, Tyler, how do you feel about the Klingon process first of doing something they know is very dangerous and just using their own prisoners for this?
Well, they're such a win at all costs kind of society that, you know, not talking about Klingon ethics is a little strange.
It's right.
Like talking about, you know, but it
counterbalances the ethics of our own crew, however, and especially what's interesting in this one is that you do have the doctor. And you have Antak, who was disowned by his father because he became a healer. And what you do see is while the warrior caste, I think, like you say, talking about their ethics might be kind of weird. One thing I do like about Enterprise, and they touch on here, is the fact that not all Klingons are like the warrior caste.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you get how you guys feel about cursing on the show, but this, we could also call this show Phlox is a Badass, just because all of a sudden he is so tough and he's going to take a real stand on all this stuff. And you realize he's sort of this dopey, really nice guy. Dopey's not quite the right word, but you know what I mean. He's sort of a just an easygoing sort of, he laughs easygoing at all the jokes everybody makes. And all of a sudden you realize, but when you put his back against the wall, he's tough. And he's going to make, he didn't think for a second about his ethical stance. He just said, I'm not going to do this. And if you want me to do this, you can just kill me. Go.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of the question really sort of gets down to what the difference is between Klingons and humans and other cultures and stuff like that, because Klingon ethics are not the same as human ethics, you know, as is dealt with in ethics. But it's a different thing. And, you know, most of these people, you know, like they say in the episode, they're like, you're just injecting your soldiers with this stuff. And they're like, oh no, they're warriors. They're totally cool with it. They understand that this is, you know, for the greater good and whatnot. And, while I can see a lot of humans, myself included, being like, I'm not okay with that. I don't want you doing that to me. Klingons, I mean, I think most of them, it's in their character, you know, to say like, yeah, you guys are totally right, you know, hook me up. So I think that the ethics are true to that culture, even if their thing, and you know, having a debate about it from a human perspective is kind of weird, because yeah, no, it's not ethical from our perspective, but it doesn't really concern us that much, aside from the fact that, you know.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about that, though, is to compare the Klingon ethics with the Section 31 ethics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. there are, like you said, there are some groups within the Klingons who maybe don't feel exactly the same way. But then there's this group within the humans who feels completely different. And you kind of wonder what the Klingons think maybe about someone who wouldn't do this, right? Like what would they look at them and be like, oh, what a crazy group, this rogue group within our, you know, our society. But yeah, those are pretty strongly aligned. And there's a lot of questions about, we talked about a little bit about off air, what Section 31 is doing here and why they're there. But that's part of the human and ethical question too, right? Like we don't just have one group making those decisions for humanity or Starfleet mm-hmm. or wherever it's going to be down the road.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, the arguments that the Klingons make for doing this are the most logical arguments which are made, you know? You know, when they have the four soldiers there you know, they're saying, hey, Phlox, you need to inject each one of us here. And he's like, what? That means three of you are going to die. And they're like, yeah, well, if you don't, then millions of us are going to die. So, you know, give us the shot, you know? I mean, what they're saying does make sense. It just seems kind of heartless when you've got, you know, three out of four people standing in right in front of you who are going to be dead.
Yeah,
because of something you're going to do to them. You know?
Well, in that moment, Phlox says, ethically, it's unthinkable. He says, only four of these will work. The other three will be lethal. Ethically, it's unthinkable. And so from his position, yes, that's unthinkable. But like you're saying, from the Klingons' position, because they know that millions of their people could die, they think it's unthinkable not to sacrifice themselves.
It's what a Vulcan would do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Although on the flip side, then the Admiral now from the Klingons, as soon as he's infected, he's like, oh, well, hold on. I'm not going to blow you up now. I'm not going to sacrifice myself. That'd be crazy.
Well, he's, you know, he's a supreme politician. So
he's a Klingon Badmiral.
He's a Klingon Badmiral.
Badmirals aren't only Starfleet.
you mentioned also a few minutes ago, you mentioned that the difference between Klingons and humans, you know, Klingons and humans are different. And the episode actually addresses that when you have Reed in the brig and you have the Klingon augment in the brig next to him and they're talking. And Reed quotes Sun Tzu from The Art of War. And he says, the greatest victory is that which requires no battle. And the Klingon says, well, Kalis teaches us that there is no victory without combat. So just that moment, it really highlighted how we see the Klingons and the humans tied up in the same situation and what steps they're willing to take. And then that really illustrates just the complete stark, just in fact, the opposite thinking between the humans and the Klingons.
You know what would have been great is if they would have had that that Klingon portrayed by the guy who played Carlton, because it's Uncle Phil was the general from the Fresh, you know, he was the guy from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Well, but that means he'd have to do his Tom Jones dance in the brig, though.
Exactly. He'd be there doing his Tom Jones dance and be talking about Kayless.
With the pink sweater on. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the whole time I kept thinking about Uncle Phil.
Then Hillary walks in the room and Hillary says, "What are you both doing in the brig?"
Yeah, that.
Mike is really, he's just looking at us right now.
One of the female Klingons was also, she's from True Blood. So there are two different Klingons who I thought, whose voice is that? Like really, really distinctive voices in this episode. It's
almost... Well, and the doctor, of course, is John Shuck,
who
played the Klingon in Star Trek 4 and 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I looked him up because I was trying to remember where I knew his voice from. And I looked him up. He was on Deep Space Nine. I don't remember. He played Parn. Yeah. And if you look up Deep Space Nine and Parn, Google will think that you're looking for something with an O instead of and that you've typed it wrong. So I didn't find the results I was looking for.
Google knows you better than you know yourself.
Well, at least it's not, you know, if you search Google for Kirk and Spock, just that, nothing else, it also thinks you're looking for that. And then you get all the images of them in a bathtub together. And yeah.
I love Google.
Anyway, he was a Cardassian, it turns out. Yeah.
Yeah.
After a little searching.
Well, I think when they find actors who are well-suited to be Klingons, then they do bring them back. It's just like when they brought J.G. Hertzler in for Judgment on Enterprise, and we talked about Klingons on Enterprise on Warp 5 about a month or two ago, and I felt that was the moment where the Klingons on Enterprise actually felt right, because I'm not a huge fan of the portrayal of the Klingons on Enterprise, especially in the first two seasons when we see them. But when they brought Hertzler in, it really felt right.
Can I just interject something here?
Yeah.
Kind of off topic, but sort of not really. 2003, Dragon Con, I went and J.G. Hertzler was there. So this would have been it would have been just at the start of season 3. of Enterprise.
That's
and
right.
Hertzler was complaining about how there weren't enough Klingons on the show, and he talked about how he was discussing this with I think Robert O'Reilly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them came up with a rap about how there needed to be more Klingons on Enterprise, and he performed it for us. And I have it on videotape, so if you guys want to see it, let me know and I'll hook you up. It was amazing.
Well, we don't need to see it, Mike. We need you to actually do the rap for us right here on the show, because you look like a rapper.
I could almost do it. I could almost do it, but I wouldn't want to touch that. You know, I wouldn't want to touch that.
What are you? Are you MC Hammer now?
I was just going to say out of respect to MC Hertzler, but you ruined my joke.
MC Hertzler. Well,
but yeah, no, I'll send that to you. It's great.
Sticking with the ethical thing, how did you feel about the end when Tyler? You said Phlox is a badass, but at the end where he actually has this power play with the Klingon Badmiral Krill, and if any other character did what he did of sending the canister over to the ship, I would have thought, of course, you know, It's probably what I'd do too. But when I see a physician do it, where a physician is knowingly, at least using the threat of infection with a deadly virus against people, I feel a little bit, I'm a little bit more surprised by it, just because it's, it goes so against the oath that they have as physicians, in which especially Starfleet physicians that we've seen in Star Trek all seem to hold very, very dear.
Yeah, you're probably right. It does feel like something which would be appropriate from a writing standpoint, but it also feels like something which is more tactical that you'd see someone like Archer do instead of someone like Phlox. You're probably right. That might have been a misstep there.
It made me want to know more about him in a way. I thought, well, if he did this, like, what else don't we know about Phlox in his past? Because, again, he's just sort of this affable, you know, gets along with everybody kind of character. And he's got a real backbone there. And you kind of wonder, you know, how he developed that and where it came from. And maybe there should be a Phlox spinoff series.
No.
Where his nephew moves in with him, and then his sister drops by all the time.
Yeah.
But you got the three wives there. I've turned around on this. I'm sold. I want to see a Phlox series next.
And each one of them has three husbands. It could be like All in the Family, The Next Generation, Denobulan.
They say here that each one of them has three husbands, right?
Yeah.
They say that here.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I hope that CBS is listening. 2016, September 8th, 2016.
There it is. It's all happening. Phlox.
I hope, but I think this needs to be on HBO or somewhere where they can really explore, you know, the nuances of such a show.
That would be interesting. I'd be okay with that.
I think it does raise interesting questions about the ethics of Denobulan medicine. You know, we see that at times during Enterprise, where Phlox and Archer kind of butt heads over ethical topics at times. And so much about these episodes actually make me wish that we had three more seasons, because I want to know more and more and more about what was going to go on with the characters. One of those things actually is related to Section 31 and Reed. And I'm watching this interaction between Reed and Archer. And I mean, you know from the beginning that Reed is in a position that he does not want to be in. But you've always felt that Reed is a very loyal person. And so here he feels his loyalty to Harris and his past obligations to Section 31. The problem is this just comes up. It's like, oh, Reed's part of Section 31. Okay. And it creates this interesting dynamic, though, between Reed and Archer. But at the same time, I feel like it feels odd to me in these episodes, because I know that the series is about to end. Not only is the series about to end, but we've got In a Mirror Darkly in the middle of the remaining episodes, which has nothing to do with anything else at all. And I feel like that it was setting up something that would have been very, very interesting in the future seasons. So season 5, 6, and 7, great relationship dynamic between Reed and Archer. But here it's just like, let's throw Section 31 into the story again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like season 4 was sort of the go for broke season, you know?
Yeah.
That's where they, I don't know, it seems like there's this like revisionist history going on where people were like, oh, well, in season 5, they were going to do this, they were going to do this. But I don't know, maybe I remember things differently, but I remember season 3 and thinking like, it may not have a season 4. And then season 4 happens, and before it even starts, like, it was sort of like there was this understanding between the fans and the network and the studio and the creators that this is the end. Like, this is all we're going to get, and they're literally going to do everything that they can and not care and just make this one for the fans and for themselves and throw in whatever they want. And when you do that, which I think is super cool and probably the way you should do every season of television, honestly. Mm-hmm. Some ideas are going to be half-baked, and some ideas are going to get thrown in there, you know, with out a lot of time to explore them. But, you know, just throwing that idea out there, I think, is worth it, you know, because there's another thing to think about. Would I have liked to have seen it explored more? Totally. But, I mean, they're just, I can forgive them for not having enough time and for wanting to do other things instead. And I'm okay with it. It never really bothered me.
Yeah, I actually thought it kind of makes sense. This is how it happened in the real world, that you would know someone for 4 years and then find out, you know, mm-hmm. if it was here. Oh, they've been in the CIA this whole time and they never told anyone because that's their job. And if anyone was going to do it, Reed's the one who would have been enticed to join. Right, because that's sort of his bent anyway.
Well, I always thought it would have been Porthos, just like Livingston is a Section 31 agent on TNG, as our colleagues on Earl Grey will remind you.
Yeah, he's a spy machine that runs on cheese.
Right. Yeah. I think. I agree with you guys that it didn't bother me. It's one of those disappointment moments for me where I feel like, here's something that we're never going to get to explore, and maybe if it had been developed earlier in the series and then we had an opportunity to explore it, I think it would have been a nice dynamic between Archer and Reed. You know, you see how Reed, especially early on, he's very uncomfortable, you know, talking to Archer, I think like at the beginning of Minefield, where he's going to have dinner with Archer and he's so nervous about it. And Reed's very loyal and he's always kind of antsy around Archer, and he gets more comfortable, of course. But then when he lets him down, you can see how much it's just really killing Reed that he has let Archer down. Just like same with Tripp, you know, at the end of Cogenitor, where Archer has to really call him out for his actions.
Just going back a second, connecting the dots. Okay, if Livingston is a Section 31 agent. Now, we just made a big deal on this week's episode of Earl Grey about how Livingston dies in Generations kind of mercilessly. And the involvement of the Klingons in that and everything, is it possible that was an inside job? I mean, we talked about how it's kind of ridiculous that the Enterprise would crash and that this Klingon ship could take them down. We see here in this episode that Section 31 and the Klingons are connected. They've got like a relationship. Is it possible that Livingston maybe pulled a Reed and Section 31 was like, we need to get rid of him? And they were working with Lursa and Bator, and mm-hmm. that's why they were able to crash the Enterprise D? It was all in an effort to kill Livingston?
Now officially part of my canon. I love
all right,
it.
Yeah. Cool. Cool.
Livingston may have been an augment too. Just throwing it out there.
Oh, he may have it.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah, it makes sense to me. Plus, we don't know if Livingston actually died in Generations, though. You know, he may have slipped away.
No, we talk about that. We do know because I made a fan film, which is also canon, where it was Generations told from Livingston's perspective, and at the end, he falls out of the thing and he's still alive, right? And he's lying on the ground while they're looking for Spot and everything. No one cares about Livingston. And when Picard and Riker are talking to each other, and, you know, Picard says, "Oh, I heard someone say time is the fire in which we burn, blah, blah, blah." And then Riker says, "Speak for yourself, sir. I plan to live forever." He then takes a step and squishes Livingston, killing him.
Poor fish.
I know. Yeah. So he is dead in canon, in the continuity. So,
Are you sure if we don't zoom in there's not like a little bitty red transporter beam underneath Riker's foot right before it touches the ground?
Don't be ridiculous.
All right. Well, I have added so much to my personal canon already today. It's been a good day so far. Tyler, you were mentioning in the other side of the room,
the other side of the room,
some of the high warp stuff here. So primarily in these episodes, we're talking about the Klingon forehead ridges and how this explains it and the virus and everything. I got a little bit of feeling here. It's it's something I feel often on Voyager, where I feel like they spend too much time on some technical aspect of the ship or the technology or such when they really need to be telling the main story. And here we get this really long sequence at the beginning of Divergence with the, well, first of all, everyone wondering, this is how Starfleet came up with the idea for the Stargazer. This is the two ships, Columbia flips around, they come together, you've got the four nacelles, two up, two down, Stargazer. That's where the inspiration came from, I'm sure. But there's this really long sequence here of just high warp speed. You know, it looks cool. You've got Trip doing the spacewalk between ships. You know, scientifically, it makes no sense at all how you're going to be distorting space-time in order to travel fast, but yet you can walk a tightrope. And then when debris flies out of the ship, you can, like, see it fluttering behind and such. But what was the thing you wanted to talk about, Tyler, with high warp?
Well, just that it felt like maybe they had an episode that was an hour and a half long.
That's
and it needed to be an hour and 40 minutes, and so they were going to throw something in, and they had some effects shots that they wanted to do, and they threw those in.
Which were cool.
It was kind of cool, except for the speed aspect, right? Like, but you can't slow down, or you will blow up, just seems, at this point, like, it's kind of laughable, right? Because it's been done with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
You got to steal from the best, you know?
it did feel, it was cool. It was a lot of cool shots in there. And, I mean, it does facilitate some of the awkward moments between Trip and T'Pol, which we have to explore. But it felt like it dragged on a little bit too long. So, Tyler, I think you're right when you say that, like, they had an hour and a half of story and they had to come up with an extra 15 minutes there to pad it out.
Well, also, in the beginning, they find a way for Trip to go onto the other ship. And then they're like, oh, we got to get him back. Otherwise, the story's not going to work.
Yeah.
So they had to write that 10-minute thing in. So there's 5 minutes at the beginning where he's going to the other ship and then 10 minutes in the middle where he's coming back.
Don't forget dinner with Hernandez.
Right. And the whole patch thing. Yeah.
It probably would have been cooler if maybe the episode before they have Trip go over there and then they have him come back with this one. That would have made a little bit more sense, because at least there would have been like a week where you'd be like, oh man, why isn't Trip on this? Oh, that's too bad. You know,
I didn't like the whole storyline of Trip transferring to the Columbia. I mean, I get it that it was supposed to be this thing. He needed to get away from T'Pol. But if we had three more seasons, they could have explored this relationship a bit more, maybe. But I think the idea of the chief engineer from the NX-01 would be temporarily transferred to the NX-02 to oversee the launch of the ship, that would make perfect sense. And I think that would be a really smart thing for Starfleet to do. But the idea that he got over there just because he couldn't handle working with T'Pol every day anymore, it wasn't my favorite storyline.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with it in theory, but I think in practice, it was kind of half-baked.
Yeah.
Well, it's like they were going to have a second ship, which was really cool. Like, you have a second ship just like this ship, and it's the second one ever. Well, somebody needs to be there that we know, that you can kind of see him on there. But then they did it for such a short amount of time, it didn't really make sense.
Yeah.
So, you're right. Maybe it was supposed to be a half a season where he was over there, but they had to cut it short because the show was obviously getting canceled.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at, like Battlestar Galactica, they did that extremely well with the Pegasus and Apollo being over there and everything.
So say we all.
And then eventually getting it back to, where it had been, spoilers. But with this, it's just like they did that, but in the span of like half an episode.
Right. Well, even The Office, when they moved down into the closet and they had the Michael Scott Paper Company, I mean, that took, how many episodes? 4-5 episodes for them to move back upstairs and sell paper for Dunder Mifflin again?
Wrong commentary track, Star. I don't know what you're talking about. Sorry.
But the T'Pol thing, we also find out apparently that T'Pol knows the prophets, or Q, one or the other, because she goes into dreamy white land when she dreams about Trip.
Maybe she's in the Matrix. Do you ever think about that? Yeah. that means the Matrix fits into Star Trek continuity too, right?
Oh, wow. Sounds like another fan movie project for you, Mike.
Yeah, we'll have to work on that one. I mean, that was a kind of a weird thing because we hadn't really seen anything like that before, had we? I mean, I know that Vulcans have telepathy and whatnot, but they seem to, I mean, unless I'm forgetting something, or maybe it's just the way that it was portrayed.
It's the way it's portrayed.
But it seems like, yeah. It seems like it felt like they just kind of pulled it out of nowhere.
I feel like the concept of it was fine. Like the fact that there would be some sort of connection between the two of them, that made sense, especially, you know, we know Vulcans can mind meld. And even though we have it in this episode where T'Pol says she doesn't know how to initiate a mind meld, you kind of feel like an intimate contact. Maybe there's some sort of residual, there's something there. I mean, Trip can get pregnant by putting his hands in a box of pebbles. I think that he can have some kind of connection to a woman that he's been sleeping with for quite a while now. But I think, so that made sense. I think it was the portrayal. And it's the same thing that happened to me when they did the Sphere Builders in season 3. I didn't like the portrayal they did there of them either, because again, they caused confusion for the audience with the Prophets and the Sphere Builders, because they had that kind of somewhat similar appearance to them. And they were in the white area again. And that's kind of like the go-to thing here. It's like, if we don't know what the place would look like where they are, and possibly it's kind of outside of our universe or space-time, or it's a dreamland or something, let's just make it all white. It's the same thing that Q did with Picard and Tapestry. Well, that was supposed to be heaven, of course, but it's just white.
It's an extraordinarily cheap solution.
It is a cheap solution.
Although there's no good solution, right? Like I dream that I'm on the bridge of the Enterprise. I'm in a forest. All of those are kind of weird. You know, you can never really pull that off. It's something great in a book that's hard to do on TV. What I did like about it, though, is that somehow Hoshi got keyed into it, too. So now she's like, wait a minute, I'm seeing someone else's daydreams. What's going on here? I thought that was kind of a romantic, fun twist on it, if you're going to do it. She's like, I was in a white room, I don't know, and it's, I don't know, sexy?
Were you in the decon chamber? What was going on? Did they? Of course, my favorite Hoshi scenes are at the beginning when they're coming out of Madame Ching's.
It's a little weird, though. I mean, a little action-y, you know, like, this episode felt really action-y. You know, like, the whole time I was thinking, like, people complain about the JJ movies and stuff like that. This episode has like way more unmotivated action. It's like they're getting, you know, held up and she's like, well, let me bring out my, you know, flying kick or whatever, you know, my Kirk move. It's like, are you kidding me? No, she'd be like, I just, you know, speak a bunch of languages. I'm not going to mess with that gun. You know, are you crazy? I wouldn't mess with that gun. No way. You know, I don't think anyone would.
Well, but, they have movie night on the Enterprise. They had just recently watched Charlie's Angels, and she decided to.
You know what I wondered, and this was only on a rewatch. I never thought about it the first time. If those poor guys got all made up in their makeup and then put a hood on, and they had 4 hours, 8 hours in the makeup chair or whatever, just to be completely in shadow the entire time.
I bet they did. Yeah.
I bet you they didn't. I think they were thinking, like, as soon as they read in the script, like, they're wearing hoods and you can't see their faces. They were like, oh, yeah, well, we're saving so much money with that move there. You
except
know?
In later when they do the mind meld and when T'Pol is seeing the events herself, at least one of the Rigelians, you can see his face. It's lit better. So at least for that, they were there.
It's like they just used an old Gorn mask or something and threw it over under a hood.
They could do the Deep Space Nine solution for the Breen. Just put helmets on them.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the cheesiest moment of unmotivated action is when they're heading, they go past the Enterprise, they're heading right for the Columbia, and then they zoom right into Hernandez's face. I don't know.
Throwback to the Cage.
I've always hated that moment in these episodes. I just think it's really cheesy.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird too. And I actually felt like, you know, there were two different directors in the two episodes. There was some slightly different direction moves.
Yeah.
And as soon as you get into the second episode, it was really clear that it was somebody else that was doing it. But that also felt like the 70s and 80s Trek movies. They would have done that on the big screen. just because they could. And so that kind of added the, it was a bad shot, but it felt like cinematic feel.
It's the very first thing you see in all of Star Trek ever.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Cage.
Well, if it's it's the first thing you see if you watch them in the correct order, which no one got to. Yeah.
Right.
But
right, right.
Mike, you're talking about when they like bring you onto the bridge from outside in space, mm-hmm. right? But they bring mm-hmm. you onto the bridge. This is like really fast. Zoom, zoom. You're right in Hernandez's face.
And they zoom in really close, it's too.
It's up.
Yeah,
it's updated
really close.
For a modern era. See, it's a commentary on what this episode is doing on the whole. They're like, we are taking what you saw in the original and updating it for the modern era. This is why Klingons have foreheads. You know, this is the equivalent of a Klingon forehead. This is the zoom into a ship equivalent of a Klingon forehead.
So are they going to explain why Talosians, who look pretty much like us with big heads, can't figure out how to reassemble a human body properly?
That would have been a season 5 episode.
Okay.
But unfortunately.
I want to know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we bring this towards the end here? The last thing I wanted to talk to you guys about was how we feel about the explanation. Do we feel like these two episodes and what they did here in Enterprise for you, did it help clarify the whole debate about Klingons with smooth foreheads and Klingons with ridges, or did it just muddy the waters more?
I mean, to say clarify the debate, I mean, I guess, I mean, just the way that you word that kind of implies, at least to me, that there was this thing that, you know, it's like when you became a writer on Star Trek, they were like, okay, I'm going to let you in on a little secret here. This is why the Klingons have foreheads now. But, you know, obviously that wasn't there. You know, I think that it was more of like, you know, we've all had that debate and we've all come up with our own explanations and we've all heard everyone's possible explanation for it. And, you know, this type of thing was certainly mentioned, you know, maybe not specifically with, you know, human DNA and augments and all that stuff, of course. But, you know, I think, you know, they had to pick one. And picking this one was just as valid as any others. And to me, the key is the way that they tied it into the augments, you know, something which they had dealt with earlier in the season, something which is a part of Star Trek history, and something which makes sense as to why it gives them more human characteristics and why they would mess with something human in the first place. It seems to me to be about as elegant a solution as you could possibly come up with. And that's not to say that it's tremendously elegant, but, you know, the deck is definitely stacked against them. And given all that, aside from maybe, you know, the explanation that was on Deep Space Nine, which is just like, we're not going to talk about it. I think it's probably the best they could possibly do.
Yeah, you know what? We kind of talked about this earlier. I don't care about the debate that much. Anybody can think whatever they want. I thought it was a fun episode. So, you know, the fact that they did it, they tied it into something else that had happened before. So I could say, oh, cool, I saw that. And now this is happening here. I see what you're doing there. And if they had done it really badly, I think I would have been upset. And I think they did it pretty well. So I'm okay with it. You know, as long as the Klingons aren't just always going to be people with sort of dirty faces, I'm good.
Well, I think for me, and the reason why I added, well, for one thing, the reason I said clarify, Mike, is that I think for a lot of fans, there is this feeling like there is some single explanation that you can follow in a linear way that in Klingon history, this happened and this is the explanation. But, and I feel like Enterprise was sort of setting out to establish that in the canon, that there was this event that happened and that's the explanation. The problem is that for me, and why I asked if it muddies the waters, is that for me, it does muddy the waters. Now, the episodes themselves, I really enjoy. I think they're good episodes with just a few pacing problems like we talked about with the whole spacewalk and the warp thing. But overall, it's a very interesting story. But in terms of the forehead ridges, we know in TOS that Kor and Kang and Koloth have smooth heads. Well, based on this explanation, those three Klingons would have been descended from people who contracted this virus. And they're cured, but there's the cosmetic thing, which is actually stated here. You know, Kava actually says that it's going to get passed down to our children. But then when you get to Deep Space Nine, you've got Korg and Koloth back for Blood Oath, and they all have forehead ridges again. So is that because Kava got into cranial restoration, as he said? I mean, maybe that's it.
Yeah, it is. So that is why. You know, these guys, they were like, you know, we've been generals or whatever, and, you know, now we've cashed in, you know, and we're going to use that money, you know, something that, you know, older Klingons who are, you know, in their retirement age or whatever, you know.
But remember, Kor, Kang, and Koloth, they won't be born for 100 years. So that means that they're born this way, and at some point when they're older, they decide, I think it's time I should have some plastic surgery done and get myself some forehead ridges.
I feel like this might have been the beginning of Klingons needing, you know, like, well, I have good forehead ridges, but I need even bigger forehead ridges. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to get them amplified. I'm getting implants. And I think that this is just the beginning of a whole vanity phase for them.
So that's where the Klingon couple, they're strolling on the beach, and the guy says, wow, check out her Klingon ridges. And his wife says, you know, they're fake, right?
Her lovely lady bumps.
Oh, man. One interesting point here, there's a comic called Blood Will Tell that actually ties into this whole storyline here. And it takes place, and there's this father, and he's telling his daughter the history of the family. And in the family are, I forget if it's Kang or Koloth or multiple of them who are related into the family somehow, but they have the smooth forehead ridges. And anyway, the interesting twist in the story is that he states that the smooth head Klingons were responsible for the Empire's expansion and the Empire's conquest in the 23rd century. And that's why we see that in TOS. Those Klingons we see in TOS were the smooth head Klingons who existed alongside the bumpy head Klingons, but they were the ones who were calling the shots in the High Council. They were the ones that were responsible for the expansion and for the glory of the Empire. And the purpose of that comic is it takes place right after the explosion of Praxis in Star Trek VI, and the elder who's telling the story to his daughter is trying to decide which way he should vote, whether or not to support the Gorkon Initiative or not. But it was just an interesting, it ties in well to these episodes of Enterprise as well as what we know later, and it's the only place that I can think of where I've heard that set up, that both existed together, and the smooth-headed augmented ones were sort of the higher tier of the society.
So they were kind of like the Rudolphs of the Klingon Empire.
I guess.
Like it was a deformity, and the other Klingons would make fun of them, and they're like, you know what? We'll show you.
Yeah.
We'll show you.
That makes sense.
We're going to drive Santa's sleigh and whatnot. And it ties into the new book that just came out, The Very Klingon Christmas. Is that in there? If not, then...
It might be.
Oh.
We'll have to ask Keith about that. It could be, yeah. And then their dad put the prosthetic forehead ridges on, and they fell off, and then all the other Klingons laughed at him. And he decided to go and conquer Organia.
Yeah, they get kind of a Napoleon syndrome because they don't have any forehead ridges. They got to work twice as hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When was this comic written, before Enterprise or after? Or I'm just wondering, like, if it was supposed to tie into it, or if this was their explanation for it back before there was a canonical explanation. Or
yeah, so this comic was written in November of 2007, so well after Enterprise had ended. So I think they are picking up on the whole augment thing.
And who's responsible for this comic?
That would be Scott and David Tipton.
Oh, the guys.
The guys, yeah.
Yeah, those guys. Cool.
All right, well, do you guys have any final thoughts on the episodes or the topic of Klingon head ridges?
I have a final question for you guys. There's a part in the episode where Phlox is standing there and the targ comes up to his leg and he's doing something.
Yeah.
And then he says, "Yeah, hey, get off of there." What was he doing? Just kind of putting that out there. Just being
just
a targ.
Being a targ.
Was he trying to eat him, or is he kind of doing what dogs do when you're at a party and there's a stranger in the house?
Like you said, he was being a targ. That's why you tell people, don't be a targ. He was being a targ. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Targs do what they do.
He was doing what all little, you know, four-legged pets do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When they walk up to your leg. I did like that they had a targ, though, that kind of wanders in and wanders out of the room there. Yeah. So it's not like a puppet that you see over in the corner of the bridge or something.
No. And we learned something about the targs in this episode. We learned that they live much longer than dogs do because he says that was his first patient.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty old targ.
And that's where the expression comes from, you old targ.
Yeah. It's really an insult, yeah.
All right. Well, let's close out with our ratings for this episode. Mike, what would you give this one?
I guess I would give this one on a scale of undeterminable somethings, right?
That's right.
I will give it three Section 31 agents.
Excellent.
Because I think it was pretty solid. As far as episodes of Enterprise are concerned, it's one of those shows. While I do like the show quite a bit, it's one of those shows where a lot of them kind of run together, and this one actually stands out as being noteworthy and distinct, or these two stand out as being noteworthy and distinct. And I think that it was a pretty cool explanation, which is obviously the sort of foundation that this episode was built on. And a few pacing issues aside, I think it was a pretty good story on its own as well. And it did a good job of tying into the season on the whole. So three Section 31 agents.
Excellent. How about you, Tyler?
I think I would give it, at some point in the episode, what's his name, Kavach, says, "Would drinking blood wine affect the results of this?" And the doctor says no. So I would give it I would give it four glasses of blood wine out of some number of glasses of blood wine.
Which is the same as seven or three, since
that's right.
Blood wine does not affect the results, right?
That's right.
Okay, cool.
Or how about I'd give it as much blood wine as you want?
Okay, that's good too. Yeah, I'm pretty much with you, Mike, that yeah, these do stand out. I know what you mean about the episodes of Enterprise sometimes running together, although in season four, we get the distinct arcs, you know, a bit more so. But like I said, apart from some pacing issues here and there, some things that I feel like were put in there to set things up, I feel like they're put there to set things up if we were going to have another season after this, you know, the stuff with Reed, the stuff with Trip and T'Pol and so forth. But overall, a good story. So I'm going to give it seven cups of Madame Chang's egg drop soup, which Phlox will really, really love. All right. Well, Tyler, thanks for joining us for the first time ever on The Ready Room. And before we go, tell people where they can find you around the interwebs if they want to chat you up.
Oh, man, I was almost going to ask you not to ask me this. I don't know. You can search me and see what happens. How about that? Look up my name, okay. And if you find me, that'd be great.
You're not really a social media maven yet.
Yeah, maybe if I stick with the podcasting, I'll come up with a podcasting Twitter handle or something for everybody.
All right. So the best thing to do right now is to write letters to you, tie them to carrier pigeons.
Address them to Santa Claus, care of North Pole. Tyler, care of Santa Claus, care of North Pole. I'll get them.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us.
Well, Chris, it was fun talking to Tyler about Affliction and Divergence. You know, it's always good to meet a new Star Trek fan.
Oh, definitely, and a fun topic too, because I can't count the number of times I've had debates about Klingons and their foreheads, and it was nice to get two new perspectives on it, and really enjoyable. Also, Mike, I was going to ask you, in news, you mentioned something about a movie, Her, and you were talking to me about it on Twitter the other day, and you said it was something that you think Star Trek fans would like. Is that something people should be looking forward to?
Definitely. You know, I mean, it's a movie which it's out in some parts of the U.S. right now, and it'll be released in the rest of the country in a couple weeks. It's by Spike Jonze, the guy who did Being John Malkovich, and he also did the Beastie Boys video for Sabotage. So there's the Star Trek connection. And it's being promoted as this, like, quirky romantic comedy, which it totally is. But it's also, like, a really good science fiction movie. It has a lot of the stuff that a lot of people have criticized the J.J. movies for lacking. You know, it's got a very philosophical take on, you know, existence and stuff like that, from a science fiction perspective. If you're a fan of Data and sort of the struggles that he goes through over the course of that series, I think you'll really get a kick out of this movie. It stars Joaquin Phoenix, and he plays a guy in the future. It is actually takes place a few years in the future, and he falls in love with his operating system, which, you know, becomes sentient.
Well, how many of us haven't fallen in love with our operating system?
You've got a point. You've got a point. But it is really interesting. I mean, I would say it's kind of like, imagine, this is going to sound weird, but imagine Measure of a Man if it was done as a romantic comedy. That's what this is. And I know that people are going to hear about it. It's going to get nominated for Best Picture and all that good stuff. But a lot of people, a lot of Star Trek fans, I think, are going to sort of pass it by because it's not being promoted as, you know, a philosophical science fiction movie. But that's totally what it is. Mm-hmm. So definitely, if you're into that stuff, if you're into Data or any of those things, check out Her.
Interesting. Sounds really good. Sounds like a movie that I would enjoy, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's interesting. And of course, our discussion today was interesting as well, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The unmade Starfleet Academy movie.
You know, even on paper. Okay, do we want to do the script, which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek V, or do we want to do the script, which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek II?
Earl Grey.
The ships of TNG.
Oh, no, it's one ship that splits into three parts, just like the D is one ship that splits into two parts. It's not a Voltron, it's one ship.
An owl formed a saucer.
The orb.
Dr. Bashir, I presume, commentary.
I know.
It's just a hustle.
The look on Sisko's face the whole time, he's just looking at Zimmerman like, all right, you're a piece of work, aren't you?
Exactly.
To the journey!
Seska.
And obviously, Seska couldn't let go.
No.
And she proved that by having his child against his will.
Yeah. Now, here is the Maury Show twist of the future. He does not impregnate her. She impregnates herself with his DNA, or so she thought. But he is not the father.
The Ready Room.
The ship.
But it's also really gloomy, and it's sad. I never want to go back there. I don't want to, like, re-experience that. Like, just the visual candy of being able to go outside and talk to the Vorta and... Wow, I maybe didn't phrase that properly. I meant the change in color and lighting.
Oh.
I did not mean, but she's a very attractive.
I thought you were talking about Kimana.
She is fetching. No. She's a fetching lass.
Warp 5.
Zindi Evolution.
Well, I think maybe Okapa and Insectoid are two races that could have a life together. You know, you've got the 9-year lifespan of the Okapa. You've got the 12-year lifespan of an Insectoid. If they meet at the right time, it could be a beautiful love story.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Iris Stephen Bear's Star Trek.
And it's the first time I heard him say something that he said several times over the years is, you know, one day when we're not the middle child, we're not the stepchild, people are going to go, holy crap, look at DS9.
Literary Treks.
Slings and Arrows, A Sea of Troubles.
you see in this book too that Picard is facing this melancholy because they've been worried about the Borg, and now the Dominion is on the horizon, and there's these two things, and obviously this is before first contact, so that hasn't happened yet. And Picard seems to be kind of weighed down in this story in some ways.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including on iTunes, on TuneIn, Stitcher, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can download or stream from the website. So grab the shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. Also, if you'd like to share your thoughts on anything we talked about in news today or on the feature, there are a variety of places you can go to do that. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the ready room, and that will come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about this show or anything about Star Trek. And then in social media, you'll find us at facebook.com/trekfm, and you'll find us on Twitter, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek under username trekfm. All right, Mike, when you're not burying your head into the novelization of Star Trek the Motion Picture to find out, you know, just what's going on with Ilia, where can people find you?
You can find me on any of 100 podcasts. I think I'm literally on 6 podcasts this week, 3 of which are right here on Trek FM. I do commentary Trek Stars with my friend Max, and this we're talking about Ira Steven Bear, and this week on Friday we're going to be talking about the 4400 with this dude who runs a Star Trek network.
I forget that his guy name. He talks too much. I'm getting tired of hearing him on everything.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, right? I also do Standard Orbit with Drew. And we just this week, we did a crossover with Earl Grey where we talk about Star Trek Generations on both shows. So that was a lot of fun. And next week, we're going to be talking about some Romulans. And then on my website, I do commentary Track Stars Off Topic with Max and our friend Brandon, where we talk about pretty much anything we want to. And you can find that over on commentarytrackstars.com, along with our very first Christmas special, which is going to be released today, a commentary for a surprise movie. So check that out. And you can find me on Twitter at comtrackstars.
Very good. A very commentary Christmas. Is that what, that's what you've got coming out, right?
Yep.
Very good. All right. Well, if you want to find me, you can find me as well on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere around the network, I'm also in a lot of different places. As Mike, as you were just saying, you can catch me on Commentary Trek Stars this coming Friday for the 4400 discussion with you guys. And also you can find me on Literary Treks with Matthew Rushing, where we talk Star Trek books and comics and interview authors. You'll find me with Matthew on The Orb as well, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. You'll find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise. And then I also have my interview show Matter Stream, where I interview writers and scientists and actors and creatives and all sorts of people about topics loosely related to Star Trek or inspired by Star Trek. So check all of those out as well. And also, I'd like to remind everyone that this is the last episode of The Ready Room for 2013. We're going to be wrapping up here at the end of the year, and we're going to be taking a break for a couple of weeks so that we can refresh, so everyone over there can enjoy the holidays at the end of December. The beginning of January is a big holiday period for me here in Japan. So we'll have a couple of weeks off, and then we're going to be back on January 15th with a new show. It'll be back to the original series. And I just wanted to thank everyone for listening this year, and of course the past couple of years that we've been doing this as well. And it means a lot to me that so many people listen to the show and interact with us on Twitter and elsewhere. And I just have a great time talking about Star Trek for everyone who's listening, and Mike talking about Star Trek with you and all the other hosts and all the special guests that have come on the show. It's just it's a really great thing every week.
Yeah, and thanks for letting us do this, because we really appreciate it.
yeah, it's a lot of fun. And so thanks everyone out there for your support of the show this past year. And I hope that you'll tune in 2014 and keep on with us as we talk about more of the Star Trek universe. I was calculating, Mike, like how many years will it take of doing the Ready Room to cover everything? And yeah, it's going to be, because we do special topics sometimes too, and there'll be a new series at some point. So I don't know, 15 years, 16 years or more, a long way to go.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
You need to start going bi-weekly at some point because, you know, I mean, why not, right? It's not like you're doing anything
twice a week. Yeah, yeah. It's not like I have any other shows going on or anything to edit.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
hey, would that be semi-weekly? I don't know.
Yeah,
bi-weekly.
I don't know. Let's go daily. How about that?
Daily. That's the goal, right?
That's the goal. All right. Well, thanks again, everyone. And before we let you go, we'd also like to ask you once again to please support our sponsors for this week's show. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. Create your own space today. Go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial, and then use offer code TREK12 to save 10%. Also, audible.com, drop by Audible, and pick up that free audiobook that you can get as a Trek FM listener, whether it's Prime Directive, Federation, Klingon, whatever you want to get. Go try it out. You're going to love Audible. I've been using them for 14 years. I couldn't get through my days and my weeks without Audible. And if you love podcasts, you're going to love audiobooks. So go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Get that free audiobook, and that helps us bring the Ready Room to you every week. And we really thank Audible for their support of the network as well. And lastly, there's one more thing that you can do to help us keep the Ready Room coming to you, and that is to go to trek.fm/donate and adopt some aliens. We have 8 original alien illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. They're available both as badges and art prints. You can mix and match. We have different contribution levels for you to choose from as well. And your contributions help us pay for the costs of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the Ready Room and all of our shows to you every week. So we really thank you for helping us keep the network going. And again, you'll find those over at trek.fm/donate.
Yeah, but the big question there, Chris, is when is the Klingon variant without the ridges going to be available?
Oh, that could be coming up soon as a special limited edition, I think.
Awesome.
Because it has to be a limited edition, because once, you know, Phlox finds the cure, and after K'Vaugh goes into his forehead ridge restoration business, it won't be available anymore. So keep your eyes open for that.
Cool.
All right, Mike. Well, it has been a great year on the Ready Room. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. I've got to go wander off right now because I'm going to see if Hoshi can teach me some good self-defense moves.
All right. In that case, I think it's time to stick some forehead ridges in it because the Ready Room is done.
That's our show for tonight. I want to thank all my wonderful guests for dropping by, and I especially want to thank you, Frank.
Don't mention it, Marvin.
And I also want to thank all you out there for watching. Please remember the moral of tonight's show. Put your troubles away till tomorrow. If you're lucky, someone will break into your house tonight and steal them.